This is the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2020, episode 18. Before we get started this afternoon or today or whatever time you are listening to this podcast, take a moment to like this podcast or also write us a review, because when you like the podcast, that helps more people find it. And when you write a review, that lets people know exactly what they're getting into when they listen to Dr. Rob and myself. And Dr. Rob, after the last podcast we did, you kind of got a good idea of how many emails were coming in, because people were pretty passionate last week. And even after beating Rutgers 28-21, people are still passionate, scratching their heads, because it was a statistical massacre, and I mean that, a statistical massacre, but yet a close game. And you even texted me in the middle of the Rutgers game and said, yep, this is the shit that drives former players crazy.
Well, it is. I mean, I think I tweeted it out in the. I think the verbiage I used was, this is what gives guys from our generation heartburn, is that you saw, I think, what was it, third quarter, I think, in terms of total offense, not just rushing, but total offense, it was like 460 yards to like just a bit over 200 for Rutgers. And I think the game might have been tied at the time. And that just is mind-blowing to me, but it really, really underscores where you see this program is at right now in terms of their ability to just win games. And it's things like the penalties and the turnovers that continue to haunt this team. Now, I will totally give you that. I think there was a big holding call on Travis Vokolek. It was a middle of the field block, and it was just, he just crushed the guy. I mean, it was not a hold. That was just a great block. Ref threw the flag, because again, I kind of do think there's a little bit of this bias. Now, I don't mean that, and when I say bias, I don't mean that in the sense that these referees got some memo from Kevin F. Warren that was, hey, if you see a chance to stick it to Nebraska, stick it to Nebraska. But it's when you've got a team that does tend to play a little bit sloppy, they too do tend to have penalties. They do tend to have turnovers. When you've got a team that's mistake prone, when you've got a team that doesn't consistently win games year in and year out, and that's not Nebraska right now. We are not winning games year in and year out.
And you're mistake prone.
Yeah, exactly. And you're losing them because of those mistakes a lot of the time. There's a bias that develops in people's heads. Referees are human beings. When they're refereeing these Nebraska games week in and week out, year in and year out, that bias develops. And that's, like I said, it's really, really hard to overcome. And I mean, Travis, you've made the point on this podcast before that good teams tend to not get calls going against them. And again, it's that type of bias. When you're a referee and you're refereeing an Ohio State game, and you see an offensive lineman crush a guy, is the thought going through your head, hey, that guy obviously held him because there's no way an old lineman from Ohio State's going to crush a guy that bad? No. You're going to be sitting there going, it's Ohio State. They've got a bunch of stud athletes. They develop them well and then ship them off to the NFL. That guy crushed the guy for no other reason than the fact he crushed a guy. When you see the same thing happen in Nebraska, you're sitting there going, okay, Nebraska's not that good. They make a ton of mistakes. They turn the ball over. They have a bunch of penalties. And you know what? They're behind a lot of other teams in terms of overall talent. And I just saw a Nebraska guy take a dude from the other team down. That had to have been a hold. Now, I'm not saying that's the exact thought that goes through your head, but that's the subconscious bias that goes through your head in those situations.
And, you know, the interesting part about it, let's just dive right into the game though, right? I mean, 620 yards of total offense. Adrian Martinez passing, superb. I mean, 24 of 28.
Well,
But no, hold on. But
okay,
but yet,
he had a couple. He did. They did take some shots downfield.
Yes.
I was going to maybe kind of start bagging on that a little, on that, those passing statistics. You do got to keep in mind, though, it's not like Nebraska was consistently launching the downfield.
I would agree with you.
There were some great ones. They had the great play where he hit Wandale along the right sideline there for a long gain, and Wandale made an outstanding catch. But again, and he had some great ones to Austin Allen as well, too. It was a really solid passing game. I'm just saying, if you think Adrian Martinez is going to be the kind of guy, though, who's going to be throwing the ball successfully with those kind of statistics,
I get it.
Consistently in a vertical passing game, that ain't it. This was the bulk of those numbers came from short yardage, mid-range throws.
But, you know what, we'll get to the turnovers in a little bit. But let's just say efficient, okay? We'll say efficient at 24-28.
It was efficient, and it was efficiently mixed with big passing plays when Nebraska needed it. It was one of the better games that Nebraska's played, and Rutgers isn't good, but it's the best Rutgers team we've had since they joined the Big Ten Conference.
But that leads me into maybe the complaint, because Steve Swanstrom, who we've mentioned on this podcast before, regular listener, texts me the quote from the newspaper that Dedrick Mills had afterwards, and that is, I'm paraphrasing here, but every time he ran through the tackles, they didn't want to touch him, and he ran them out. Or just ran by him. That should drive every Husker fan nuts, because that's what you've been saying for years. Run up the middle. Go north and south. He goes 25 attempts, 196 yards, 191 net.
Well, and that was the thing that was so incredibly frustrating to me a handful of games this year. Minnesota's like the model for it, where Nebraska was consistently getting 5 to 7 yards on first down runs with Dedrick. And then so you're sitting there with a 2nd and 3, 2nd and 4, 2nd and 5. You know what? Just do it again. Doesn't have to be the same play, obviously, but keep the ball on the ground. Even if you get 2 yards, you're now sitting there at 3rd and 1, 3rd and 2, and any offensive coordinator can do. I mean, it completely opens up that playbook. You can do anything with a 3rd and 2. I mean, that's a great if it's 3rd down, 3rd and 2 is kind of where you want it. You got a little room to work with. You know what? A quick dive running play is going to pick it up. A really good quarterback sneak, for God's sakes, is going to pick it up. A pass to the flat, a screen pass, which again, I know it haunts Nebraska, but even a screen pass or a pass to the flat that gets stuffed for 2.5 yards is going to give you the first down. So they had the opportunity to put themselves in a position to do what they did to Rutgers. They could have done that to Minnesota and didn't. And the thing that I find frustrating is that you see Frost, and it appears he's trying to implement this kind of somewhat intricately fragile offense. And I say that in the sense of, if that offense gets going and everything's clicking 100% on all cylinders and everybody executes their assignment with perfection, the offense is going to be impossible to stop. But that's in the real world, that doesn't happen. And that's why I call it intricately fragile, because it is. One little thing is even remotely out of whack, everything just kind of falls apart. There's not a lot of buffer within that offense. Within what you see Iowa running, for instance, right now, there's buffer within that offense. You run a zone blocking running play, and you know what? If a defender makes a play on the front side, you still got to cut back one. And that's something that Nebraska's offense just doesn't have currently. If one little thing's out of whack, the play's dead. And so that's why I find that incredible. That's why I say it's incredibly frustrating, because they could have done what they did to Rutgers. They could have done that to Minnesota and made a deliberate decision not to do it because they were trying to, quote unquote, run their offense.
So what happens now? They finished 3-5, and we'll get to the as we record this podcast, which is on Sunday at 12:06 on 12/20/2020. There are rumors, and I haven't seen anything confirmed by the university, that Nebraska will not attend a bowl game or will opt out of a bowl game. There's been some reports out of there. Have you seen anything concrete?
The thing I saw was coming from Gary Sharp, who said, per Bill Moos and Scott Frost, and Nebraska is not participating, has decided to not participate in a bowl game. And I kind of heard a lot of rumblings about this earlier on. I mean, and when I say earlier on,
I saw it last night. There was the NTV.
Yeah, I mean,
the guy in Kearney was the first sports director on it, who said they let the players vote and the players opted not to. Does that surprise you?
It doesn't. Do I not like it? Yeah, I got to be honest. I don't like that decision. Now, I'm going to go into why I say that. I mean, from my experience as a player, now I'm saying that's my experience. I'm not down in Lincoln. I haven't been trying to play football in a COVID world. From my experience, this seems completely antithetical to how I thought, how we thought in that time period. Somebody put it, the opportunity to play another football game in front of us, we were going to go play that football game. I mean, if let's say Nebraska 1994, let's say Nebraska defeats Miami in the Orange Bowl, and the powers that be say, hey, here's the opportunity. We're going to put Penn State in front of you. You can go play Penn State now. We'll call the Rose Bowl and the Orange Bowl against Miami and Oregon, respectively, as a semifinal. We're going to have Nebraska and undefeated Penn State go play for a winner-take-all national title. You know what? If we, hey, can we have 2 weeks to make sure we're healed up and prepped? Yes, fine. Let's go. We're doing it. And you talk to the Nebraska guys on 97. My brother played on that team. You talk to any of those 97 guys, they were dying for a chance to go play Michigan. It's another undefeated team. You know what? Let's kill all the hypotheticals now. Let's go play the game and put this to rest. And that's something that, again, it's just from my generation. Now, it's awfully easy, I get it, for me in hindsight to say, oh, heck yeah, we totally would have gone and played Penn State. But at the time, that was something that we were like, fine, bring them on. We'll crush a team from the Big Ten.
I do.
97 guys thought the exact same thing as well, too. So,
you know, believe it or not, I do get it, though, right? I mean, it's been an emotional, taxing year for students, student athletes. I mean, Nebraska is not the first team to opt out of a bowl game. Several others are. They've put a lot of these other bowl games in jeopardy just because they're going, you know what? These guys haven't seen their family. They haven't been home. It's just get them out of here, go home for a break, and get the mental well-being taken care of. I get it.
I get that, but at the same time, too, now here's where I start having a little bit of an argument against it.
Okay.
I'm also sitting here going, yeah, but you know what? At the same time, too, like, I'm out here in the world with the rest of every other person in America going, okay, well, I got to get up and go operate in a COVID world also, and that doesn't end for me. Like, I got to go out and practice medicine in the COVID world. You got to go and try and do essentially construction management in a COVID world. It's the world we live in. Now, if every other team in the country was sitting here going like, screw it, we're done, I'd maybe get it. But then you look at a lot of these other teams who are like, oh, hell no. We're playing for a national title. Get us into the playoff. Get us into a bowl game. You know what? We earned this. We're going to go play in it. So, I mean, I see both sides to the coin. I'm not trying to sound callous when I say here I don't get it, and it seems antithetical to my thinking. I do get it. I understand what the players are saying when you say they've basically been locked up since April, and that's probably why, because we talked on an earlier podcast about how some of these teams like Nebraska, Iowa, Iowa State have essentially navigated through all of this without having a COVID mm-hmm. outbreak on the team. And part of the reason Nebraska's been able to do that is because they've done an incredibly great job of locking guys down and isolating these players, and they've done it for a long, long time. And yes, that absolutely does wear on them. It's probably why you see a lot of these guys hitting transfer portals. These kids from Florida that are saying, you know what, I can't take this. I just want to go home. I'm transferring. So, I mean, I do get it. Do I like it? No. Can I point to as many examples as you can give me that support this decision? Again, assume, like I said, we've got members in the media now that are reporting it. As much as you can find good reasons to support the decision, I do think there's plenty of examples and plenty of reasons to say, hey, it just runs counter to what I think these players ought to be thinking and doing. So there's arguments both sides. So when I say I don't like it, you can't tell me there's not reasons to say this is not a good decision or it's a wrong decision. There are reasons to say this is a wrong decision. I'm not the one making it, though. I'm not in these guys' shoes, and so there you go.
So
take that for what it's worth, I guess.
So Nebraska will have a 3-5 record, another losing season. Scott Frost again with another losing season. Do you think he makes changes during the offseason? They just signed a pretty good recruiting class, if you go by the rankings, which I don't take much stock in those, but Rivals says number 19 in the country right now, could move when they sign some more guys later in February. But do you think he makes any changes as far as coaching staff during the offseason?
I don't think he does. Because, I mean, I think when you look at where I think you've seen some development in Nebraska, the places where I saw the development on the defensive side of the ball, and there's still critique to be made there. I mean, I've traded messages with guys that I played with who played defensive line, who watched Nebraska and have plenty of criticism for things that are seen. But some of the better development we've seen has been on the defensive side of the ball. And while I do not like the 3-4, well, I'm sitting here going like, you're in the goddamn Big Ten. Why do you not put a fourth defensive lineman on the field? I kind of get it. I mean, that's a critique. But you can't tell me they haven't had development on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, the linebackers, who were supposed to be a weak spot, played reasonably solid. For the first time, we saw a defensive line that, for the better part of the year this year, the defensive line was not where teams were beating Nebraska up at. Ohio State had trouble running against Nebraska. Iowa had some trouble running against Nebraska for about three quarters they did. Nebraska did some good things. You look at that defensive backfield. There was a lot of games where those guys rose up and made plays. Ohio State executed well in the passing game against Nebraska, but again, it was this really efficient kind of mid-range where they kind of – God, it's Justin Fields. The guy, I got to be honest with you. I think if Ohio State played a 9 or 10 game season, I think Justin Fields is absolutely in the Heisman discussion with Trask and I'm absolutely blanking on the Clemson kid all of a sudden.
Lawrence?
Thank you. Yeah, with Trevor Lawrence. I think Trevor Lawrence, Trask, and Justin Fields.
Hell, I think Breece Hall from Iowa State deserves to be there. I know
I'm
sure.
I think in terms of numbers, but I think some of that too. Now, hold on. I think a lot of that, though, here's the thing. I think Breece Hall deserves to be in the discussion. I think he's probably top five. I don't think he's top three.
I'll give you that.
The reason I say that is he really, really, really good? Yes, he is really, really, really good. When push came to shove, did Breece Hall win the games that Iowa State had to win?
Oklahoma, first time around, yes. Yeah, first time around. Texas, first time around, yes. So
yeah, how about Oklahoma the second time around? Although, well, honestly, you could say that's not Breece Hall not winning, that was Brock Purdy losing.
Exactly. That was, by the way, that was a horrible pass. That was a bad decision by a quarterback that has as much experience as he does. And if you want to know what I'm talking about, go back and look at the end of the Iowa State-Oklahoma game yesterday.
Yeah, it was. And that, you know what, you could even say that was as much a game that Iowa State lost that game as opposed to Oklahoma winning that game. And so I will give you that. That was probably just that was on Brock Purdy and Iowa State losing the game as opposed to Oklahoma winning it. And I think Brock Purdy took the ability to win the game, probably took it out of Breece Hall's hands. It's one of those things. I think Breece Hall's top five. Don't get me wrong. In terms of best, and I'm talking best players in the nation. When I go Heisman, I don't go, well, is it a stats thing? Is it a winning thing? I'm just going by who do I think are the best players. I think Breece Hall's top five. I think Trevor Lawrence is truly next level. I think Justin Fields is truly next level. And it's kind of weird little things I look at when I say that, but I think Fields is one of these guys who I think he's a dual threat quarterback, and he's the rare dual threat guy who's going to be who's a legit NFL candidate.
Well, let's transition because you brought up some of these guys. Trevor Lawrence was spectacular last night against Notre Dame.
They just gutted Notre Dame.
Ohio
State. Clemson with Trevor Lawrence is a different team than Clemson without Trevor Lawrence. But keep in mind, too, Clemson without Trevor Lawrence was a double overtime loss to Notre Dame. I mean, they still nearly won that game the first time around and didn't have Trevor Lawrence, which tells you how good Clemson is. I mean, that's a damn good team even without Trevor Lawrence.
So what you have now is the college football playoff, which is Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and Notre Dame. So you will have Clemson play Ohio State. You'll have Alabama play Notre Dame. That doesn't surprise me. People are mad because Notre Dame's still in. Listen, Notre Dame's only loss is to number two Clemson, and Clemson's only loss is to Notre Dame. I know people wanted A&M because A&M's only loss was in week two to Alabama. It's not a perfect system. It's not debatable whether you get eight. That's not a debate that we can have because that's like off-season stuff where you say, yeah, we need to have this. You can only work in reality. So working in reality, did the college football playoff get it right with these four teams? Even though Notre Dame lost late, do you think they deserve to be in that top four?
I think they're top four. I think if you were going to put Notre Dame against Florida and have them play five times, I think Notre Dame wins four out of five. I think Florida's a really, really good team.
How about A&M? Because A&M's
But you got to go back for Florida and explain that loss to LSU.
Yes.
And that's something that you don't have a good explanation for. There you go. And also, I will also say the game that Florida played last night where they were putting up incredible numbers offensively, and Trask just unleashed against Alabama's defense. You know, you don't see that Florida offense every single week.
True.
I mean, they play incredibly well. That's a great offense and a pretty solid defense. But what you saw against Alabama last night, you didn't quite see that level of play every freaking week from Florida. And you absolutely didn't see it against a not great LSU team. So I think that discounts Florida. I think teams that I do think A&M's got an argument. Do I think A&M is truly one of the top four? No, I really don't. I think they're fifth or sixth. Absolutely. Should they be part of the discussion? Yeah, I think it's worth discussing them, but I don't think they're top four. And this is more of a condemnation of the four-team playoff. I mean, I've said from year one, eight teams at a bare bones minimum. If you want to do like a 10 or 12 team playoff with some, where you start working in kind of a few of the teams, you start working some bye games in for the top seeds, do it that way. If you want to go 16, I think that's even better. But I've been saying from the get-go, eight is a bare-bones minimum for what we ought to have. And again, there's no good argument against it in my mind. I mean, other than if you want to say, well, what about the bowl games? I'm a traditionalist. I like the bowls. It's like, you know what? At this point, what's the bowl game Nebraska was potentially slated for?
Hell, I don't even know. I don't even care.
It was like the Match Light Charcoal Bowl or something like that. I mean, it was just one of those. I'm at the point now where I look at the names of these bowl games and I'm like, you know, could you tell me what its name was before the sponsorships took over? Was this a Peach Bowl? Was this the El Paso Bowl? The Sun Bowl? I mean, What bowl game did this used to be? But even that doesn't even count anymore because so many of these are bowl games that came into existence just within the last 15 years. So that whole bowl game / traditionalist argument, I think, you know, throw that out the window. I mean, if you're a hardcore old school bowl game, Cotton Bowl, Rose Bowl, Orange, etc., even Fiesta, fine. Will incorporate you into the playoff structure. You can have be a first round, second round bowl game, and then the big dogs can still rotate through the semis and the title game. But it's just there's no good argument, and the fact that we're sitting here having a discussion about A&M isn't in reality a discussion of, did the playoff committee get it right with the top four? That's not the argument or the discussion. The discussion is when is the college football playoff, the committee, the teams, the NC2A, when are they going to get together and step up and say, okay, we're going to do the same thing that we do with all the other divisions and have at least a 16-team playoff. And that's my problem. And you can make all the arguments you want about, well, the school presidents don't like it because it infringes upon academics. Well, okay, how about all these Division III liberal arts schools where their kids aren't even on full-ride scholarships because they don't have true athletic scholarships at NC2A Division III because of their intense focus upon academics? They've got a goddamn playoff. Just do it.
Oh.
There is no – yeah, I mean, we're the only division – 1A is the only division that doesn't have a full playoff. This four-game thing is not a playoff. It was an argument designed and intended to stave off discussion of a full playoff.
You're probably right, and because Cincinnati right now, and the big thing is, you know, why even
Cincinnati's another great argument in favor of.
But you know what? Cincinnati can't compete with any one of those four, and you know it, right? I mean, they can't.
But it's, you know what? There's a few teams that could have some runs in there that could pick up an upset. I want to see what a Coastal Carolina can do. I want to see what an Arkansas State can do. I want to see what a whoever it is that. I mean, maybe it's already happened, and I just haven't paid attention.
Well,
I want to know what the MAC champion can do.
Ball State? You want to see what Ball State can do?
Was it Ball State? Is that who won?
Yeah, Ball State ended up beating Buffalo the other night.
Well, there you go. So let me see what Ball State can do. Let's see what I want to see what in a good year somebody out of the AAC can do.
See what
I mean? That's the kind of thing I want that I'd like to see, because some of those teams are going to come in there, get mad. You're going to have a Coastal Carolina versus a BYU matchup, and BYU is going to literally and figuratively get punched in the face and lose the game. And all of a sudden we're going to be like, okay, well, this Coastal Carolina versus Iowa State matchup is going to be great in week two of the playoffs. I can't wait to see that. I want to see that stuff happen.
I get
Let's
it.
Create March Madness in December with college football. Why not?
I get it, but see, here's what's going to happen. You do that, you say, all right, Sun Belt, all right, Conference USA, all right, AAC, you're into the playoff no matter what. You're going to have some of those other Power 5 teams going, just what you have now, going, hold on for a second. We're better than those teams. They don't even come close to playing the schedule we do. You're shifting the argument with more teams. You know that, right?
I get it. But you know what? If you're an undefeated top five team and you don't get into the playoff, there's a little bit of legitimacy to that argument. Now, I shouldn't say a little bit. There is a very reasonable amount of legitimacy to that argument. And I get it. There's always going to be teams that think they want to get in. How many teams make the NC2A tournament? What is it, like 64, 65? There's always that little play-in thing that screws the numbers up in my head. So you get this 64-team tournament in college basketball. I get it. There's teams that would fall into 65 through 70 or so that end up going to the NIT that are sitting around, that those teams and their fans are sitting around bitching and moaning, oh, we should have gotten into the NC2A. Do you know who cares about those people bitching and moaning?
Who?
No one.
True.
No one cares. It's going to be the same thing. You have a 16-team playoff when 18th-ranked, 17th-ranked South Florida and I don't name somebody. Let's say Arizona State is sitting at 18th and Central Florida is 17th, and those two teams don't get in. When they bitch and moan, nobody really cares. When Texas A&M and Cincinnati don't get in, it's worth a discussion. Hey, you got Cincinnati. They won all of their games. You've got A&M. They played a tough schedule, got some really solid wins, and their one loss was to Alabama, arguably the best team in week two. Is that worth the discussion? Yeah, that's absolutely worth the discussion here. And so that's why I don't buy into this whole, well, if you have a 16-team, the argument against a 16-team playoff is, well, you added more teams, but you just kind of kicked that discussion down the road. Okay, yeah, I mean, technically you're correct, but do you really care about the 17th and 18th and 19th ranked teams bitching and moaning? No, nobody cares. Do you care when the 5th, 6th, and 7th ranked teams complain. That's worth a discussion then. I'll give them that.
So your idea then is the Power Five conference champions, the group of five conference champions, and then six at large bids.
You got six at large. I mean, I think if you have six at large, six wild cards there that are going to make it, I think you eliminate a ton of discussion, because that team that's sitting back there at 17th, 18th in the seedings. I'm not saying rankings, because technically they're not going by rankings. It's a seeding process here. That team that gets that 17th seed, there's going to be some legitimate arguments against that team making the playoff. Yeah. When you're the fifth ranked team and you're not getting in, it becomes harder to find those arguments. There is one argument against Texas A&M not being in the playoff, and it's they got one loss. That's your only argument. They got a loss, and they were a little bit lower in the rankings to start the year. That's our only argument against them. There's plenty of arguments for them to be in the playoff. When you're number 17 in the seedings, there's going to be like a half dozen to dozen long list of reasons why they didn't make it. There's not going to be one reason they didn't make it. There's going to be a dozen reasons they didn't make it. If you're ranked 17th, you've got two or three losses.
I would say of all the years we've had the playoff, this might be the most difficult year we've seen. And who knows how it would have turned out if everybody would have played a regular schedule, right? I would say for the most part, this thing's worked itself out. Whether you agree with it or not, this has been the most difficult year, I think, based on the circumstances.
I agree. I really do. And I think it's – but again, it's created this picture of where you see a lot of these teams that are sitting here going like, okay, you know what? We did everything we needed to do, and we're not even going to have a chance at it. I mean, it used to be a few years ago, it was you'd have one team. You'd have Central Florida. So Central Florida's sitting there going, we did every single thing we needed to do to be able to make it into the playoffs, and we didn't, because we're Central Florida, we're in the AAC, we're a group of five school, and that's what kept us out. It's like, hell, put us in a bowl game against a really good Power Five team. And they did, and they won it. They beat Auburn. The next year, they did the same thing again, and they go and play LSU, and they lost. LSU is definitely the better team, but they went punch for punch with LSU that entire game.
Yeah,
it wasn't like LSU came in and nuked them. I know LSU after that game was kind of trying to pull the whole like, yeah, this is what happens when you mess with the SEC. It's like, you know what? Shut up. Freaking an AAC team traded punches with you for almost four full quarters. So, you know what? Take that shit back to Baton Rouge and go sign Joe Burrows. There's those teams can do some damage. And the biggest argument right now, there's two arguments, and this is kind of half behind the scene arguments against expanding the playoffs. And those two arguments, one, is that the Power Five schools don't want to be in that situation. They don't want to expand to 16 teams because they know there's going to be a 16 seed, a 14 seed, a 12 seed that's going to upset one of those upper seeds. You're going to have a group of five school that's going to be a nine seed's going to knock off an eight seed. A 10 seed's going to knock off a 7 seed. And it's going to be an Arkansas State beating an Iowa State. It's going to be a Coastal Carolina is going to beat a Michigan at some point.
So
if and when they expand that, and those Power Five schools, that's who controls I think the decision-making process to a great degree.
Well, they do, because football is not an NCAA-sanctioned event, right?
So so that's who's pulling. I mean, that's who's pulling the trigger. That's who's calling the shots here.
But in the grand
scheme, they do not want. I mean, granted, it'd be a lower seed loss. I don't think they're super worried about Clemson going up against an Arkansas State and losing. What they're worried about, though, is Michigan losing to a Coastal Carolina.
That's fair, but
I mean, they're worried about an Iowa State losing to a Louisiana Lafayette.
But this,
that's what they're worried about is those 9 versus 8, that 10 versus 7. Those are the upsets they don't want to see happen, and that's where a lot of the impetus comes from. The other big argument against it, and this goes back to 1993, 1994, when we had some preliminary committees investigating this. Now that you've got the situation where you've got athletes from Northwestern and Stanford making legitimate attempts to unionize, where you're seeing the whole name, image, likeness movement going forward, where you're seeing the Supreme Court getting ready to rule on and basically NCAA athlete professionalism in sports. That's just a development this week where the Supreme Court's going to hear that case. It's all of a sudden it becomes this argument has been growing for 25 years that if you expand into a full playoff, the revenue generated is going to be mind-blowing. Think about the think about the television rights just for the Big Ten Conference, just for the SEC, just for Texas, just for Notre Dame. Imagine the television broadcast rights for the football version of NCAA March Madness. I mean, it's going to be freaking billions.
It will be.
I think they're
creating more demand by saying, you know what, we're going to keep the 4-team till the end of the contract. You build a demand for it, and then
that
the price
demand is going to be there, but the dollars and cents are going to definitely be there too. And I think there is a very legitimate concern that at some point, from a legal standpoint, the athletes are going to step up and say, you know what, F this professionalism thing. The NCAA can go kiss our ass. We're doing our own thing. Pay us or we walk. And I think you're gonna see a point where the athletes are going to develop enough power, enough legal standing to demand to see some of that revenue. And I think that's been a little bit of a governor on the engine here for a number of years. It was back in 93, 94. As soon as it got brought up at those NCAA meetings investigating the feasibility of a playoff in college football, as soon as that got brought up, I mean, it slammed the door on discussion of it for years.
See, this conversation we just had is really sports talk radio for like July. At the end of the day, working in reality, you have no problem with the 4 teams selected, though, correct? Which are Alabama,
correct,
Clemson, Ohio State, and Notre Dame. You think those are the top 4 teams?
I do. So for here, mid-December, late December 2020, to answer that argument, they got it right. But yeah, sorry, I got a soapbox.
No, because
the whole playoff thing.
Well,
it's just, I don't know. It's a pet peeve of mine.
I get it. It's kind of like arguing should Pete Rose be in the Hall of Fame, right? I mean, sports talk radio guys fill their time almost every single day with this because, well, it's easy. And it's kind of mind numbing. And I'm not criticizing. It's just like, well, that's great, but it's not the reality we're working in. The big question is, did they get the top 4 right? And I'm with you. I think they got the top 4 right. I feel bad for Cincinnati, but when you struggle against Tulsa and you don't really dominate all the way through your league, it's just hard to compare your conference to the SEC. It's hard to compare your conference to the ACC or even the Big Ten.
Well, I would have, and I would have taken A&M over Cincinnati.
So
I mean,
I'm with you.
You got to admit, the whole concept that undefeated doesn't equal your best. I mean, and I get the whole, you got to play the schedule you're given and you take what's in front of you. You can't help it otherwise. It still doesn't mean you're the best. Sometimes it potentially does. That 2017 Central Florida team, I think they could have gone toe-to-toe with damn near anybody. Do I think they beat – I'm blanking. Was it Ohio State who won it that year?
God, I'm going to have to go back and look. My memory's not good.
Yeah, it was a Clemson or Alabama year.
Isn't every year a Clemson or Alabama year?
Well, other than that year, Ohio State won it, yeah. But, I mean, it's you know what? Was Central Florida going to beat either Clemson or Alabama that year? Well, I got to be honest. I'd have to go back and look. Whoever lost the title game, I think Central Florida could have gone toe-to-toe with. I don't know if they win, but I think they definitely could have gone toe-to-toe with them. And I think that year Central Florida would have been a team that I would have said, yeah, they probably deserve a shot at it. I'm not saying the teams who did make the playoff that year didn't deserve it, but I think Central Florida did. But that's why you need more teams. Anyway, all right, I'm getting off the soapbox.
No, I get it. And again, but the thing is, when you look at the four teams, you're going to have a lot of people say, you're probably – I know people are mad at Notre Dame because Notre Dame gets in there after getting blown out by Clemson. But you're going to have a lot of people up to get mad about Ohio State and the lack of games that it played.
Yeah, I mean, there's an argument against Ohio State. There's an argument against Notre Dame. But, I mean, I even said earlier, Notre Dame beat a Clemson team without Trevor Lawrence that Clemson's what? They finished number two in the rankings?
Yes.
So Alabama won, Clemson two, then Ohio State, then Notre Dame. Correct. I thought Ohio State was number three.
You are correct. You are correct.
I don't have them sitting right in front of me, so I'm going after a quick glance at them here. So, I mean, Notre Dame beat the number two team.
Yep.
Now, granted, that number two team didn't have their quarterback. But let's say we flip-flop the way this panned out. Let's say Clemson with Trevor Lawrence beats Notre Dame in a blowout a few weeks ago. And then the game that they played earlier in the year, that was the ACC title game, and we see Notre Dame win a double overtime win against Clemson without Trevor Lawrence. I'm maybe bumping Ohio State to number two. In that situation, I'm making Notre Dame number three and Clemson number four. I'm still keeping those four teams. So I say that in the sense that I think Clemson is head and shoulders good enough with Trevor Lawrence. Obviously, I think Clemson deserves to be in. But I don't find that blowout loss that Notre Dame had, I don't see that as much of a black eye as maybe some other people do.
By the way, back to the 2017 college football playoff, which Central Florida was left out of, it was Alabama over Washington 24-7, then Clemson beat Ohio State 31-0, and Clemson beat Bama 35-31.
Okay. Yeah, so does Central Florida – I think Central Florida could have definitely hung with either Washington or Ohio State.
I would agree with you.
Absolutely. Are they going to beat – that was a pretty damn good Clemson team.
Yeah,
I mean, they hung – I mean, that was the one where they had was that the one where Tagovailoa came from behind – led Alabama to come from behind win?
No, because Clemson won that game, 35-31.
I'm sorry, you Clemson won at 35-31.
Yep.
Yeah, that was still a pretty
good Alabama.
Tagovailoa
was the Georgia
team.
Game, I believe.
Okay, there you go. I don't think Central Florida beats Clemson or Alabama that year, but I do think they could have knocked off Washington or Ohio State that season.
Hey, going back to something we talked about, Nebraska not playing in a bowl game, it is official now since we've been recording this. And also, Minnesota has opted out. Michigan State has opted out. So more Big Ten teams have said, you know what, we're just not going to play.
There's going to be bowl games looking for teams. There's going to be – you're going to end up seeing the Arkansas States getting into some pretty good bowl games here, I think.
So you mentioned bowl games. The college football playoff, and Brian Kelly said, listen, and I thought it was – I understood what he was saying about the Rose Bowl not allowing any fans or parents or family members. They have now officially moved the Rose Bowl to AT&T Stadium in Dallas. So Pasadena
I love it.
Pasadena will not be hosting. I think it's the right play. Listen, if you don't want to let they're going to let by the way, if you watch the Big 12 championship game, there was no social distancing in Dallas yesterday.
Not at all. And I kind of have an issue against that. But if you want to say, "Hey, we're going to I mean, there's ways to do it. I mean, if you're going to say, "Okay, we're going to let all family members you want in get first shot at it, and then open it up and say X number of boosters, and then each school can have 1,000 students attend." Okay, you put that into what's AT&T hold?
Like over 5,000. No, I think is it closer to 100?
They might be. So yeah, okay, you put in 100,000 seat stadium. At that point, you're talking like 25,000 people in a 100,000 seat stadium.
Yep.
You'll be able to spread those people around.
They didn't spread the Iowa State fans yesterday.
What's that?
They didn't spread the Iowa State and Oklahoma fans out yesterday.
Yeah, but the Big 12 has been like that from the start of the season.
It really has.
Yeah, I mean that's Big 12. I mean I'm just saying you can come up with a system to spread people out. There was a couple of games that I saw this year where they had a legit 25% attendance allowed. And when the camera would pan the crowd, it was legit spread out throughout the entire stadium. So if you work it that way, I think you're doing pretty good. And there's ways to do it. Yeah, I'm not saying let's move it to AT&T and put 75,000 people in the stadium. I'm saying move it to AT&T, you open it up for players' family, and then you go from there a little bit above and beyond and then call it good. The zero attendance thing, I'm not in favor of.
I wonder, because all along they were going to let the Rose Bowl do its thing, I wonder if Brian Kelly saying something just kind of nudge them along going, well, maybe he's right. We can't keep family members out.
Yeah, I think that was – I legitimately think that was a straw in the camel's back. I think there was going to be some – I think there was going to be some pushback against that no matter what.
Yeah. Hey, what did you think of Brett Bielema getting the Illinois job?
I'm kind of on that.
So am I.
Yeah, so here's my take on it. You go back and look at Wisconsin. So Bielema's tearing it up there. Now he's doing it the quote unquote he's doing it the Barry Alvarez way. Strong defense, good running game, good solid game managers at quarterback, nothing flashy. He leaves. Is it Gary Anderson coming in?
Yeah, Gary Anderson left Oregon State to Was that what it was? Gary Anderson left Oregon State.
No, left Utah State.
Okay, Utah State. And then went back to Oregon State after Riley left. Yeah, that's right.
Comes to Wisconsin. And so Bielema finally is like, screw this. I can't do this with Barry breathing down my neck telling me how to run the team. He leaves. Anderson comes in, follows the Barry Alvarez method, does the exact same thing, kicks ass. He gets tired of it. He leaves. And they leave and they don't do that great. I mean, they just don't. I mean, you look at what Chris has done. He's like, fine, I'll do it the Barry Alvarez way. And he's done well. This year is an outlier. But, I mean, for the most part, he's had great seasons up there. Paul Chris stays there for another 20 years. He's going to retire as a Hall of Fame coach. When you follow Bielema after he leaves Wisconsin, it's pretty unimpressive. there was a period of time there where I kind of sat there and thought, like, dude, it'd be awesome if we could get Bielema and Lincoln. Now I'm just like, yeah, no, forget that. Yeah. What he did at Arkansas was completely, completely unimpressive. I mean, I'm not going to say it was a disaster, but it's not like you watched that and thought to yourself, oh my God, he tore it up there. I mean, I think he had the recruiting resources he needed to get his people in there, but it's all of a sudden he ended up moving away from that model of what Alvarez had established at Wisconsin, and things just went downhill.
Yeah, I to me, he wanted to be his own man. You know, Barry didn't try to keep him. Remember that? I mean, it was kind of a and you have to understand when the guy who built the program continues to be your boss, you are going to live in a shadow. You're always going to be compared. Hell, Osborne was compared to Devaney that way, right? But he stuck it out.
Well, I don't even think it's a comparison thing. I mean, the legit behind-the-scenes reports were Barry will tell you how to run the show.
But you know what? I mean, if you're winning, and he was winning Big Ten championships, who cares?
Well, and that's my take on it. I mean, if you're Wisconsin who I mean, for the most part, when you look at the Big Ten West, again, I get it. Iowa's had some great teams. Well, guess what? They kind of do it the Barry Alvarez way, too. I mean, that's kind of Ferentz's model as well. And quite frankly, I think Ferentz out-Barrys Barry. I think Ferentz needs that. I think Ferentz, both Kirk and Brian, need to open things up on offense. to a fair degree. So, but I mean, it's that same model. But when you look at the Big Ten West, you've seen a flash or two out of Nebraska there under Pelini. I mean, that was a few years ago, but you saw a couple of flashes there. You saw Minnesota for a year or two, but otherwise, I mean, it's been Wisconsin being Wisconsin, and it's Iowa been acting like pseudo Wisconsin. There's nothing wrong with that system. It's ruled the Big Ten West since we've had a Big Ten West.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, my friend, this is the last podcast of the year. It was an interesting season. We didn't know if we were going to have a podcast, and then we said, screw it, let's just go ahead and have a podcast.
No, we didn't know if we were going to have football.
That's so true. So true. But I'm glad we did it. And happy holidays and Merry Christmas to you and your family, by the way.
Absolutely. Have a great Christmas. Yeah. I think the next time we're recording, it's going to be after Christmas.
It will be. And I do have to say this, in a COVID year, our listenership continued to increase, and to everybody who takes the time every single week to listen to this podcast, Dr. Rob and I do really appreciate it. I mean, it's an hour out of your time. We know that an hour is valuable. Everybody's time is worth something. We're glad that you feel that the hour that we provide you is worth something and worthy of listening to. We appreciate it. I think we've been doing this since 2014, Rob, is when we started this thing. We were podcasting before podcasting was cool. I mean, everybody and their mom has a podcast now. It's true, though. I mean, you and
That's
I...
That's true. It is true.
You know, we were doing... And it was the brainchild of Dave Remington, who... he is just such a great friend and a great supporter. And again, as you get closer to the new year and you have those tax deductions that you need to make, consider the Boomer Esiason Foundation, because it's been a rough year for the nonprofits, man. It just has. It's hard to raise money when you can't have events. It's hard to keep things going. And please support the Boomer Esiason Foundation, of course, the Remington Trophy Celebration. Don't forget about our other sponsors, Husker Hounds. Listen, you can get your last-minute Christmas shopping in right now. Visit one of Scott's three locations in the Omaha area or shop online at huskerhounds.com. Buy some beer for somebody. And if you're going to buy some beer, buy some Infusion Brewing Company beer. And it's not too late to get Nebraska football season tickets for 2021. And that's where you're going to get them at Ticket Express right now for your stocking stuffers. And of course, Husker Max is such a nice friend, a good partner, as they put this podcast up on their podcast each and every week that help even more people find it. So follow Dr. Rob on Twitter at DocTalkSports. You can send us emails whenever you like. That's DocTalkSports@gmail.com. And make sure to have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And Dr. Rob and I will talk to you in 2021.